Hello, everyone. Welcome to Radio Free Nintendo, the podcast, episode 136. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz. With me tonight, as usual, Greg Lay and James Jones. Unfortunately, John Lindemann couldn't be here with us tonight. He's quite busy with other site duties. And taking his chair this week, we have former site director and founder of NintendoWorldReport.com, Billy Berghammer.
Thank you very much. How's it going, guys? Well, actually, wouldn't I be not founder of Nintendo World Report, though, because...
It's retroactive.
Yeah. it's successor state status.
Am I kind of, like, grandfathered in at that point?
So. Yeah, sure. But, yeah, tell us what you're doing now. Of course, you're not working on the site anymore, but...
No, I'm not. I kind of concluded my stint of screwing off / freelancing for a bunch of places at the end of... last year, and have moved to Los Angeles about a month ago, and I'm the new editorial director for gaming for G4 Media. So that is my new gig.
What kind of stuff are you doing in there, man?
I'm doing a lot, actually. I'm in charge of G4TV.com and all of our editorial efforts there, basically everything dealing with the gaming side of things on the website. I also oversee our video on-demand efforts. So, you know, when you see, like, X-Play or there's game trailers or game footage that you can download from your, you know, local cable or satellite providers. Also oversee our video podcasts, our show like...
Oh, I get X-Play podcasts.
Yeah, and that's one of the most... I think that's the most... Actually, that's the most popular video gaming podcast... on Aww. iTunes. So, not that I had anything really to do with it. I've only been here for like 10 minutes. So, but it's, you know, it's very good. And, also our mobile efforts and, a bunch of other stuff. So, they're keeping me busy. Been working my ass off just trying to get up to speed. And it's a big switch from freelancing and even a bigger switch from Game Informer, even, you know, when I was doing this lovely website here. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. The moving cross country from Minneapolis to Los Angeles was a giant bitch. I never want to do it ever again.
It's been done.
It's a fun drive.
It's been done before by a basketball team, right? So
yes, sir. Exactly. The Lakers.
Totally doable.
That's a nice bit of trivia there. But and Louis the cat actually rolled first class. I upgraded my ticket, so the cat rode in the cabin with me.
Wow.
On the plane, all wasted on kitty drugs, and still unpacking. I have the man room, aka the living room, set up, and all my gaming consoles. That was like first things first. You know, I don't care if I have my clothes.
The no chicks allowed room, or the no chicks would want to enter room.
No, that's my office. Ouch. That's like nerd central. It looks like Best Buy puked in here, but like just like all like. Somebody came in here and was like, wow, you have a pretty impressive GameCube collection. I'm like, yeah. I mean, you know, but it's
who
just
does
like, it? Yeah, you know, and well, I think through the years of, you know, when I was running Planet GameCube, they kind of build up, especially the imports.
Yeah.
It was actually fun going through a lot of that stuff and when I was setting it up, and I'm very tempted to... I haven't had a GameCube actually hooked up for a while because of the Wii, but... looking at my imports and things like that, I kind of want to grab one of my Japanese GameCubes and have that hooked up, because there's so many good classic games that I can't play on my US Wii. So I don't know. That's it. I'm rambling. Sorry, I had a Red Bull today.
I know a lot of our listeners are wondering if we're going to get a chance to see you on G4 on TV.
I was actually on X-Play a week ago with Adam, talking about Adam Sessler, talking about DICE when we were, talking. I wasn't actually going to DICE, but we're kind of promoting the guys that were going out there. Raymond and Brian Leahy were out there and doing live blogs of all the DICE events and interviews and things like that. And so I was on for probably a minute and a half, and... I did okay. I need to lose some weight. Seriously.
But you're going to be on more often, right?
Yeah, I get. The goal, I guess. I guess on their side, they want me on weekly. So, we'll see how it works. But you know, it's a lot of fun. Everybody on X-Play is great. Like Adam and Adam's been a good friend of mine for a long time, and Morgan's really cool too. And it's really fun. So I like where I work. The people there are great, and we're going to be doing a lot of great things on the website and across the multiplex, as they call it. So it should be cool.
Well, when you are on X-Play, make sure that those segments get added to the iTunes video feed, because I don't have cable, so otherwise I won't ever see them.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I'll see what I can do.
You're the man, right?
Not so much.
There's a highly disproportionate number of Billy clips in iTunes. I don't understand.
I don't know what happened. No,
There should be a Billy X-Play feed.
I think if you go to g4tv.com, you can track it down if you look at the X-Play portion of the website. So okay. There's only one clip. It's not that, you know, it's not very exciting. But it's fun.
The best part of X-Play, and I'm not even sure that this is on the broadcast, it might be online exclusive, but it's called Sessler's Soapbox.
Oh, that's the
shit. Those are really funny, really entertaining, and I think a lot of people who may have seen Sessler on TV and think he's just a spaz or just he's like some hired gun, you know, like some guy with a broadcast journalism degree or something who has a good speaking voice, you might be surprised at how much he really, really knows about gaming. He's an extremely intelligent guy, and I'm not sure that always comes across on camera so well, but I think when you see this like kind of video blog that he does, the Soapbox, you'll be really impressed with what he really knows about gaming.
You know, the thing is, all three of the hosts on the show are actually really big gamers. Adam is a huge, huge gamer. I mean, yeah, he's very excitable, as you said, but he's a huge gamer. Morgan's actually a big WoW player. Which I didn't even know because I'm actually a WoW player. So that and Blair is also a big gamer too. So, they're not just up there because they look good. Well, Adam, you know, Adam. He's gonna hear this. He'll be like,
fired.
Yeah, it was great being here. So no.
All right. Before we get into the actual content of the show, I just want to make some notes up front here. We're not talking about Eternal Darkness tonight, partly because John couldn't be here, and we wanted to talk about all this 10th anniversary of the website stuff, which is why we asked Billy to substitute. So we're pushing that off another week, and I apologize for that. We didn't give much advance notice, but hopefully that won't be a big problem for anybody, so we'll definitely be talking about it next week, but we didn't want to cram it in and make a 3-hour show this week, so for Greg's sanity and everybody's scheduling.
No pun intended.
To Eternal Darkness next week. Yeah.
Just looking at the length of the waveform and saying, this isn't happening!
I think by the time you hear this episode, the poll for the next retroactive game might be up. It should be. I wanted to have it up before we recorded tonight, but I didn't have time. So I don't know what games are going on there, but look for that, and we'll probably leave that up for a week or two. So you should have plenty of time to vote for the next one after Eternal Darkness. All right, we're not doing a full new business this week, but I did want to ask Billy if he's been playing anything interesting lately, since we don't have him on very often.
Okay. Gosh, let's see. It's funny because since I moved, it took me a long time to actually get all my crap unpacked and get to my games and stuff. But I've actually finally had some time to sit down and play some games. Yesterday I played Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles Echoes of Time. Square Enix stopped by, and I got to play that, and I don't even, like, I'm so pissed off about this game. Like, the game is actually good. Like, I think people that like Crystal Chronicles, especially since they don't have the bucket anymore. I mean, they got rid of that after the GameCube one, but carrying around that stupid magic button that put the circle around everything. They got rid of that. It's still not there anymore, which is great. But I was really excited because they're like, we've got the Wii version and the DS version, and they're both the same game, and you can play DS, you know, versus Wii and Wii versus DS. And I was like, wow, that's really awesome. But then I found out where the whole thing basically shits the bed. And you can't, only one Wii can be used. So, like, you can't play Wii versus, you know, like four Wiis against each other, or a mixture of, like, two DSs and two Wiis.
It's one Wii hosting three DSs, is that right?
Correct. And the Wii has to be the host. So,
yeah.
That is fucking retarded.
You can't even play DS versus DS online.
You can play DS versus DS online. So it's basically going to be like four DSs or three DSs and a Wii, or, you know, just like two or three DSs or whatever. But you can't do four player Wii. Or, like, it just blows my mind. Like,
I'm trying to wonder, like, why exactly would you even want this on Wii? Because it's not portable. You can't play other Wii users online.
Exactly.
It looks exactly like a DS game, except blown up on a screen.
No. And so, like, it's the only thing that's good about it is it actually looks pretty good if you have, like, a HD TV widescreen or whatever, because it puts the two windows side by side, and you can make one bigger than the other. However, the touchscreen interaction is so great on the DS that it doesn't... That's the other thing. That's the other reason why you wouldn't even want to play it on the Wii, because to select your spells and the built-in chat functionality that would be all on the touchscreen or the bottom screen, you have to use the frickin' pointer for. Which is like, that's great, because when you're on the fly, needing to, you know, switch your spells or do one of the built-in chat things, like, you want to do that really quickly. You don't want to, like, dick around and have to aim, and I don't know. I was just, but I didn't play the Wii version. I played the DS version. We had three DSs in a Wii, and, you know, I guess if you don't have a DS, which would blow my mind anyway, because if whoever the customer for this game is going to be that hardcore of a person, a Nintendo person probably, that they're going to have a DS anyway. So I don't know. You know, and I asked the PR person there that was demoing the game, like, seriously, why is this so retarded? And he had no answer. So my guess is it's Nintendo's fault. Like, they probably didn't want it to happen or something, because they probably have a game that's going to be doing the same sort of thing coming out later. That's all speculation, but I don't know. It just, it pisses me off. If you
lived in a world where the Wii version didn't exist, do you think this is probably going to be really good?
I think it's actually gonna be pretty cool. I mean, the wireless worked great. I mean, we were playing locally, so I really can't say that much of, you know, how it's gonna play online, if there's gonna be lag or whatever. But everything seemed pretty speedy. The frame rate seemed to be, you know, just fine. You know, graphically it was cool. You know, I didn't play the single player. The embargo lifts actually Friday, so I haven't touched it yet, but. You know, I think I'd play it. You know, I mean, I wouldn't be that poor bastard that's got the Wii version, but I don't know. In my opinion, like, if Square was smart, because the Wii version is so gimped, I would bundle it, like, together. And
that's not Square.
That's
though.
Interesting.
No. Well, I mean, the both SKUs are $40, right? So
yeah.
I don't know. Give somebody the option to you know, maybe charge them like $20 more or $10 more. I mean, the disc isn't really costing them that much, so, you know, you want a large user base for an online, the game that's, you know, most people are going to want the four-player multiplayer, right? So why not bundle the disc in or something like that? But
that makes sense to me, yeah. I mean, that way you can kind of have people playing it, you know, you kind of get two for one, and it doesn't cost Square very much more to package it.
Yeah, so
that makes sense. But then at the same time, they might be afraid they're eating up sales, you know, they're giving you two games for one, so it's not
yeah,
a good business.
Yeah,
because
if it is primarily a multiplayer game, you know, they might want somebody to, like, badger a friend into buying it or something, and if they have, like, two copies of the game, essentially, then they wouldn't need to do that.
And I assume on the Wii version, you can't play, like, say, two-player on the same copy of the Wii version, right? You can't use two Wii controllers. I mean, that was the thing people bitched about with the original Crystal Chronicles, is that you had to buy all these GBAs and stuff, but at least you only needed one copy of the game.
And when you were more likely to have friends that owned GBAs than you were to have any one of four people to own a GameCube, to be honest.
Right. Right.
Yeah, well, you had four GBAs, four link cables.
Well, you needed as many GBAs as you had players. And so then you had two.
The patience for the fucking bucket of death. I think it just irritated me.
But it was almost
makes a fun drinking game.
Basically, if you had two players, it was almost exactly the same as playing it with one player.
True, but yeah. That game was beautiful. You know,
it was. It really was.
Actually, still is.
Great
if
music.
You've got component cables, it's really, really a good looking game. But yeah, so that's you know, Final Fantasy. Been playing a lot of Left 4 Dead. Still awesome. Started playing Killzone 2, which is interesting, to say the least. I haven't played the multiplayer since the beta, but I started playing the single player, and the only thing that kind of bothers me is it's very bro-y, you know, with, like, the characters, like, kind of like, you know what I mean? Like in Gears of War. So, like, it's like, ugh, dude, you know, like, ugh, my balls itch.
The overly
you know,
macho.
Like, it's very...
Is it trying to out-Gears Gears?
Yeah, it's not as bad as Gears, but, like, the first 5 minutes, I was just like, really? Okay, so this is what we're doing here, but, like... Gorgeous game. Like, I'm very, very impressed with it. I think they have a real serious love for lens flares and light blooming, but I don't
really get the point of using, like, maybe the best graphics engine ever done in a console game, and yet setting it in this really gritty, ugly place where everything's gray and brown and dusty. To me, Prince of Persia is a lot, you know, a much more, it's a nicer game to look at, even if the graphics aren't as technically impressive, because, I don't know, I get a little down on games that are just so oppressive with their color palette and the style of the world, and Gears is this way too, where everything is just like gray and brown, and then there's blood.
Well,
it's basically Mad World, except not done... It's not as blatant as
well.
Marvel,
at least with Killzone, I haven't gotten, you know, I haven't seen all the levels yet. You know, that's the one thing I was really happy that Resistance 2 did, for example, was that they varied the environments enough so it wasn't just that same drab brown crap. You know, it was actually a very lush world. So, you know, I'm hoping Killzone varies it up. I also started to play Hawks, which I thought was pretty fun. I
like the demo.
You know, I was actually really surprised. Was there a tutorial in the demo? Because I didn't download the demo.
Yeah, sort of. The first mission is a tutorial on how to use the mode where you kind of zoom out and you can control the plane more, you know, more carefully.
You know, I didn't check in within the game if there's like actual tutorial like in the menu, but like when you start the single player campaign, there's no tutorial. It's like bam, you're in the war and you're going to town and the only reason you know the controls is in the loading screen. So I was really taken back by that. I was really surprised about a first game in a series, which I'm going to assume if this game is successful, Ubisoft is going to have a sequel. So for a first game that's their first flight game that they don't have a tutorial, I think is pretty
stupid.
Since
Blazing Angels.
You know, oh yeah, true. And you know, but you know, and I ate it like once or twice in just the first level, and it wasn't that hard. It was just I hit the ground because I wasn't, you know, I didn't understand certain things with the shoulder button controls and whatever, but very good looking game, seems a lot of fun. I kind of dig it. So
I was actually trying to download the demo before we started to talk about it, but it was going pretty slow. Is it like arcade-ish or is it more serious?
It's very arcadey
you'll, and
I think
like
you'll
it.
Really like it, James. I played it, and when I was playing the demo, and I thought, oh, I feel like James Jones here. I'm enjoying a flight game. And it kind of made me want to play Ace Combat.
The demo is there. Download it, man.
Yeah, maybe I will. But I have a feeling that Ace Combat's not as much fun. It's just, I have a feeling it takes itself a little more seriously.
No.
Well, I don't know. I don't really have like a really strong desire for that kind of game, but I did enjoy the demo for Hawks. I just don't know if I would really want to play through a whole game of it. But it's cool.
Let's see. So three other games. Street Fighter 4, which is awesome.
Whoa.
Super fun. And I'm really happy for Capcom that game is successful. Like, They've obviously sold a crap ton. All the sticks are sold out. You know, way to go, guys. You know, now it's bring over Capcom versus Tensunoko or whatever the hell it's called for the Wii, and you know, then there's gonna be a lot of Wii owners happy. Resident Evil 5, been playing that. I actually like it. In comparison to a lot of the haters out there, the controls don't bother me as badly.
Are you liking it as much as you liked RE4 when it came out?
I don't think so. Like, and I think it's because I don't like Sheva, that your little cooperative friend, and I wouldn't even call her cooperative. She's not cooperative.
She's not shooting you, basically.
No, and I haven't played it co-op yet. I do think I will want to play it co-op. I don't like how the inventory system is set up. However, I understand why they had to revert to that, because it is co-op, and if you had to pause the game to go into the inventory, it would screw everything up for the other player. So I get it, but I don't know. It's obvious that Resident Evil 6, when there is one, definitely needs it. You know, if they want to do the over-the-shoulder Gears look, but not have walk-and-run shooting, that they need to totally revamp the gameplay. And even the producer has said that he knows that they need to do that, but whatever. You know, I want to play it because it's, you know, basically the spiritual... It's a sequel to 4, and 4 was unbelievable. And, you know, I had fun with it. I really actually had a good time with it, and... You know, I'm ignoring all of the everybody flipping out about saying that the game's racist and all this crap. Like, whatever. It's a freaking video game. Like, Capcom's not, like, trying to be... I don't know. It's just... It's a game. So, I personally enjoy it. So, I'm very much looking forward to it coming out. And I will play all the way through it, probably solo and co-op. And the last game I'm playing still, of course, is World of Warcraft, which is not
surprising. We don't want to hear about that.
The game is still the best. So, it's crack, and Lich King is like, it's like crack that they added to crack to make the crack even better, and
it's crack
sprinkled with cinnamon sugar, right?
With cinnamon crack, it's like the new crack, and it's I mean, for. I don't know. There's something about it. I've never been sucked into an MMO like this before, and I keep coming back. It's like the ex-girlfriend I can't get rid of. And all your friends tell you not to get back together with her, and you're like, yeah, maybe just for a little bit, and then you hook up for a while, and then you break up, and then you get back together again later. Like, it's totally like that with World of Warcraft and me. And I,
scary.
I just can't quit it.
All right. Well, I know Greg had a little bit of new business, but not... from playing a game, right?
Oh. I suppose not really playing. I downloaded for the Japanese Virtual Console Alien Soldier, which I think was the last of Treasure's Genesis games. This is available in North America now as an import title, because it didn't come out in North America originally. But this is the Japanese version, and it has some spellbinding text in it. I just had to share this. The title screen greets you with this... Visual shock, speed shock, sound shock. Now is time to the 6800 heart on fire. Alien Soldier for Mega Driver's Custom.
Mega Driver's Custom.
What the hell?
Sweet.
What does
I
that
am
mean?
A Mega Driver.
But then, that's only the beginning. Then the story scroll.
There's more?
The story crawl starts sort of coming up like vaguely Star Wars-ish or something. And it says, this is the beginning of it, it says, A Earth was in terrible crisis in the year 2015.
A Earth.
Yeah.
Not the Earth.
It's A dash Earth, actually. I don't know what that means.
It's mathematics.
The shadow of the evil terrorist group called Scarlet.
Lists can be frightening.
Blocked the way to the outside universe for human beings. Members of Scarlet consist of artificial creatures created by a human using super genetic engineering.
Super genetic engineering. Not just genetic engineering.
Oh, no. Oh, it's way beyond that.
So the enemies aren't actually aliens?
I don't know.
They're super genetic engineered.
Does this game contain contain aliens or soldiers?
I have not a clue. It goes on, they are the secret society intended to destroy the entire human race.
Oh, it goes on.
It keeps scrolling for like 2 minutes. And the funny thing is, it's all in English. And then on the bottom, it's got the text in Japanese on a sort of ticker style going really fast.
That is the
most bizarre thing I've ever seen as an intro to a game. I'm surprised there aren't internet memes about this, because I mean, it's not quite as iconic as all your base are belong to us, but well, it's far more bizarre. Well,
the only way to play it until I think it was on that PS2 collection.
Yeah, it was on the PS2 collection. It did come out in Europe once upon a time, yeah, and things like that. But I mean, it's a good treasure game. It's the one that's sort of like a giant boss rush, and I mean, it's technically so impressive.
Are you recommending it, Greg? Because I might kind of want to pick this
up. I haven't played enough of it to really offer details and recommendation at this point. It seems very, very difficult, although it has two difficulty settings that are named super easy and super hard. So I don't know whether they're as disparate as that suggests or not. But
Jesus. Well, aren't you like some giant space chicken kind of
thing?
Yeah, like,
pretty much. Yeah, that's absolutely... It's called Epsilon Eagle or something.
Epsilon Eagle.
And, pretty much you're a giant space chicken thingy, and you just have these like little interludes where you kind of shoot up sort of standard enemies and regain health and gain power-ups and stuff, and then it's bosses aside from that. And I mean, it's very technically impressive. It's the graphics are sort of more traditional arcade style than the cartoony Gunstar Heroes. I mean, the game's pretty similar to Gunstar Heroes fundamentally, run a gun and all that sort of thing. But it's got this big detailed sprites, impressively animated for Genesis. I mean, it's really, really pushing it hard, and so it's impressive in that sense. And I mean, a whole game of treasure bosses. I mean, for some people, that is a very, very...
Sounds pretty good.
God bless them, but they can't hire a translator.
Yeah,
you know, I feel like whenever we use the phrase technically impressive, it's like the most amazing backhanded compliment we can hand out. Because it almost feels like there's...
No, it doesn't say anything about the art, so the art could be good as well. It's just sort of, you know, they're...
No, I mean, it just is a case of, you know, when you think of, you know, some of the early Genesis games, you know, like, you know, the conversions of Alt and Beast or whatever, you know, I mean, it's so far, far in advance, you know, it's so impressive how far they took it, you know, but...
Even the first Sonic the Hedgehog, like, it looks pretty bad now. If you compare it to Sonic 2 and especially Sonic 3 and Sonic and Knuckles, the first Sonic is pretty janky.
And of course, I mean, they did this on Genesis without so much of the sort of explicit frippery of Super FX chips and all this sort of stuff that went on with the Super NES.
But they had blast processing, dude.
I would like to add this game to our museum of terrible Sega cover art, just looking up the alien soldier. By the way, Epsilon Eagle... As a main character, we can say this game doesn't have good art just from looking
at it. It is what Billy said it is.
Holy Christ.
Well, dude, if you're listening to AAC, look at your iPod right now.
Wow.
Enjoy that image.
Seriously. And Fox McCloud would have totally hit that.
Oh, that's terrible image now.
So, moving on from new business, we're not really going to do the news this week, but there was one big story that came out that I thought we should kind of bring up since we've been keeping on top of the news pretty well lately, and that is the announcement of A Boy and His Blob for Wii. This is a retail game. It's developed by WayForward Technologies, and it's a 2D, basically, sequel or reimagining of A Boy and His Blob from damn near 20 years ago. Mm. So this was big surprise. I mean, there's really no indication that anything like this was on the horizon, and now we've got screens and video of it, and I think it's beautiful. It definitely looks, you know, in the vein of maybe Wario for Wario Land Shake It.
It's starting to develop into a nice trend of really beautiful 2D games. We think of Muramasa that's coming as well. Yeah. Maybe that could be sort of a niche on Wii. If you want to impress sort of core gamers, do it with they appreciate sort of traditional gameplay. Do a really beautiful 2D game.
Geometry Wars. In a different way. It's very beautiful, I think. And of course, you've got World of Goo.
So, I mean, I can't say as I'm particularly familiar with this property at all from 20 years ago.
I played the NES game. There's a sequel for Game Boy that is pretty obscure, and I have not played that one. But the NES game is very primitive. In execution, it's not programmed very well. It's pretty buggy, and gameplay wise, it's very old school. You start off, you know, you're this boy. You have this white blob that's following you around like a pet, and you have a bag of jelly beans, and you feed it different flavors of jelly beans, and the blob turns into different tools that you use to get to new areas and eventually get to the game and solve puzzles along the way. And one of the big problems with the game is that, number one, it doesn't tell you what any of the different jelly beans do, so you just have to experiment. And number two, you have very limited quantities of all the jelly beans. So I think there are even one or two flavors that you only get one piece of it. And you have to use that in one specific part of the game. Mm. And if you use it before to see what it does, you can't beat the game.
Huh.
So you almost need a guide to play it.
Kind of antiquated even for 1989.
Yeah.
I guess perhaps that's why you know, the in some ways that this is being taken up is they see the potential, but obviously if you could apply the more kind of accessible kind of game design of today to it, it could be really cool.
I think it's a brilliant move, because it is a very cool idea for a game that, you know, you have this living tool that basically morphs into whatever you need at the time, and you use that to solve puzzles. And I think that's a great template to build a sort of a puzzle platformer game from, but the way it was executed back then was so brutal on the player and so obtuse that I think it's a great idea to revamp this and kind of make it more user friendly. I mean, we've seen in the videos that when you bring up the menu to choose your jelly bean, it basically gives you a preview of what the blob will turn into when you feed it that, and it also appears, at least at this point, that you have unlimited quantities of the beans. So that's good too. But then maybe my question is, can it be challenging if you have unlimited jelly beans? What's there left to really, I mean, the puzzles are going to have to be pretty tough.
And the level design. You know, I think what's really exciting about this announcement, it's coming from Way Forward, and they did Contra 4 the DS. And, you know, that turned out very, very well. And, you know, I think it's exciting. The art style is beautiful. I'm really excited about it. And, I don't know, it's nice to be excited about a new game for the Wii.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I am excited about it, but I'm also a little hesitant with Way Forward. And I mentioned this in the forums when this announcement came out, but I really think Way Forward is way overrated. And Contra 4, somewhat notwithstanding, it is well made. I don't think Contra 4 is very interesting, and I bought it and then returned it. I mean, I traded it in after a couple weeks because I just felt like there wasn't anything left for me to do in it, and I didn't really like it very much. But I'm not saying it's badly made. I think it's well made. I just think it's not for me, basically. It's too hard, and it's not all that much fun. But I have played Ping Pals, which Way Forward made.
Are you serious?
Which is ass.
Oh,
it's ass.
This is one of Johnny's favorite podcast topics, actually. This might be the third
Ping
time
Pals?
That Ping Pals has come up on the show. Long before we actually started doing it, James.
But... Oh, okay.
I have a long memory.
Yeah. And I had to review Sigma Star Saga for GBA that they made. That was another game with really nice 2D artwork and totally shit gameplay. So I'm a little concerned about A Boy and His Blob, but I do have hopes for it. Like I said, I'm very impressed with the graphics, but until I play it, I'm going to be overly cautious about this one, because I've yet to play a Way Forward game that I really liked.
One that everyone mentions is Shantae, which I haven't played or anything. Has anybody else played this?
Nobody's played it. It's like a It's like one of those cult films that, like, you hear people whisper about, but no one's actually seen it. It's not on Netflix. It's not on DVD, whatever. Shantae, yeah, I mean, they keep, the other thing is WayForward's been talking about, like, first it was going to be a GBA sequel to Shantae, and then it was going to be a DS sequel to Shantae, and now they're saying they want to make a Wii version of Shantae, but none of them ever amount to anything.
Well, I think it just comes to them not getting backing.
Well, there's no market demand for it. The original sold like 1,000 copies on Game Boy Color. And it was, so it's just,
I think most of the copies went to review outlets.
Yeah, it may very well be a great game, but I've never even seen a copy of it.
All impressions that I have is that it is a good game, and I saw it at the time, and I was like, not really interested.
Now, has anybody seen Lit?
It's not out here or on the Japanese, as you might expect, so I haven't really had the option to access it.
Yeah, it's a WiiWare game that looks kind of interesting.
It sounds like a great idea. I read a lot of reviews of it because I really thought that it might be something that I wanted to download, but I ended up being turned off by it a lot because the reviews kind of basically said it comes down to a lot of trial and error because the puzzle elements, like the rules of the way the puzzles work, are kind of inconsistent, and so you end up trying something that you think should work based on what you've seen in previous episodes, but in this particular level, it kills you. And that just doesn't sound that much fun to me. But, you know, if I went to a friend's house and he had it, I would definitely sit down and play it because I'm curious about Lit.
Okay.
Anyway, that's the news, A Boy and His Blob from WayForward. And now we're going to talk about what's going on with our website. March 7th marks the 10-year anniversary of Nintendo World Report, or it's, of course, been through a lot of different names over the years. The original name was, Billy?
Planet N2000.
No, the original name.
It was Planet N2000.
Uh-oh.
You always told me that it was the N2000 HQ.
Oh, well, I never got the domain for that, because somebody actually bought it.
Why?
Okay.
So, that was, like, what I wanted it to be.
Oh,
but
okay.
It never actually was. So,
I got a little mixed up on the history then. Okay.
Yeah. So
I thought that was kind of what we were called for like a month or something like that.
D minus.
Yeah, you fail.
I failed my history exam.
I was trying to get that domain, and I think when I was like dicking around with just like the first couple days of the site, somebody else picked it up. So
yeah.
Because I mean, that was even way before. I think it was even before it was called, like, there was Dolphin, you know, like, the code name for GameCube.
Yeah.
So, the rumors were, you know, at even before Dolphin, it was, you know, technically the GameCube was called the N2000.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of why I rolled with that, and I rolled with Planet, because I was a big Quake fan and first-person shooter fan, so I kind of liked Planet Quake a lot, that website, so I kind of... And I like that model, you know, just how the site was laid out, as well as Blues News. I was a big PC gamer at that time, as well as a huge Nintendo fan. So that's kind of why I went with Planet N2000 would be the original name. So I failed on getting the unofficial N2K. I forget what the hell I was going to do, but all of the iterations that I wanted were taken. So.
Well, the idea behind that, the name that you wanted, was that it would kind of segue from the site you worked at before, which is N64 HQ.
Correct.
The very famous, legendary N64 headquarters. So that, I mean, that would have been really cool to carry over, but I think Planet N2000 ended up serving us pretty well for the first couple of years.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, we were an IGN affiliate during part of that time, so our name got out quite a bit, and, yeah, we don't have to go into that part of the
No, that's
tale.
Cool. You know, I mean, you know, they served.
I think people maybe a lot of our newer readers maybe don't realize we were ever involved with people like IGN, UGO, Cloud Chaser, which is probably a bygone memory anyway for most people.
Yes.
But we were involved with a lot of different associations and business relations over time, and they all came and went, and some of them don't even exist anymore, and we're still around.
Oh.
Which is crazy. You know, I've been trying to write my... Because technically the birthday will be over or whatever, but I'm writing the intro to our birthday or are we calling it a birthday or anniversary? Or
anniversary,
are you guys?
I think is the term we're using.
I like anniversary better. Birthday sounds like we're a little kid. We're a little 10-year-old kid.
I mean,
I know, but that's ancient in internet.
Okay,
years.
So fine. So I'm writing the intro to our 10-year anniversary, and just looking back on all the stuff, and like I was looking at the Internet Archive or you know the Wayback thing, and just looking at the first design, I was like, wow, this is so awful, and like the shit that I wrote back then was just terrible, and like because there wasn't anything to write about, and you know, like. And plus, I had never really... I mean, I wrote for the N64 HQ, but they were, you know, they were reviews or features or things like that. So that, you know, I was just... I don't know. I was figuring shit out. I didn't know what I was doing. I was, you know, I'd never started really my own website before. And, you know, God knew, did I... Would have ever thought that it was going to go for 10 years. Like, it's absolutely mind-blowing. And it's super exciting. You know, even, you know... talking to some friends that I've known throughout the years, you know, after doing this site, like, you know, saying, hey, do you remember, you know, PGC, you know, or, you know, NWR is 10 years old this weekend. Like, holy shit. And then, like, you know, joking with, like, just, you know, talking to Justin Nation, you know, we're just talking, like, all these kids, you know, working on the site now, and we're just laughing at, like, some of the stupid shit that we did back in the day, like, just because we didn't know what we were, you know, Justin knew programming and writing, and I HTML and me were a joke. Like, I did everything in Front Page because I'm completely...
I was going to say, I remember updating the site with Front Page.
Hell yeah, man. That shit
was
rocked.
Pretty funny.
It was so ghetto, and the code was so bad, like, because the code that, like, Front Page 98 spits out is just absolute shit. Like, it's just...
Oh, yes.
It's horrible. But I didn't, you know, that was the best I could do, and, you know, surprisingly, it worked. You know, I mean, I don't know, just looking back, if you go to the Wayback Machine and read my writing, I'm glad it's got... I think, personally, it's gotten a lot better, because, wow, it was really bad.
I wish... I want to say right now, reading it, I wish we could still type things like, here's 2 weeks worth... of wanted foyo ass.
Oh my god, shut up.
But I'm pretty sure right now if I typed that, I would at the very least have John wanting to talk to me.
Well, nobody was working. There was no... I mean, I wasn't working for anybody, and nobody was working for me at the time, I don't think.
Well, we had no editing policy process, period, until I joined the staff.
Yes.
Nothing.
And then you ruined it for everybody.
There was no filter. It was... whatever, it was more like a blog. It was like, whatever you find...
Post it.
And however it looks when you type it up into the...
It's awesome.
Into the browser, that's what it's going to look like.
Because there's no...
I tried to do my part to raise the journalistic standard a little bit at the site.
I got to find this, but if you go back to the Wayback Machine, there's a little... If you look at the bottom... Like, this is the original Planet N2000, so, like, it's... It uses every fucking color of the rainbow because that was like, you know, because that was cool.
This 90s web design.
So crappy. It was, dude, it was so awful. And like, but if you scroll all the way to the bottom, there is an image of Louis's head on it. And if you click on it, it still works through the archive. You can hear Louis purr. And I recorded that.
Oh, nice.
And so, like, I was fucking around the other night, and just, like, when I was writing this intro, and, like, oh, my God, I wonder if this still works. And sure enough, like, for that, it's still up there.
Yeah, if you, while you're in the Wayback Machine, you could look up informant.net, or just search for the informant, you know, no I at the beginning, and you'll find some fairly embarrassing stuff that I wrote, too. And actually the informant, I meant to kind of do a blog post or something, but I didn't have time. But the informant turned 10 years old last month in February. And unfortunately it's not really active anymore. It is really the only way to find that content is through the Internet Archive, or you could ask me to send you a zip of some old HTML files. But I mean, every now and then I just get this weird hankering, and I go dig into those archives on my hard drive, and I end up reading that shit for hours because it's so funny, And it's so nostalgic to go back and relive some of those memories and to see the evolution of my writing over the years is interesting to me because, you know, I'm still learning a lot.
I just found something. This is hilarious. Our first ever trivia was on November 25th, 1999. And I'm going to read this post to you because you're going to laugh. So this is posted at 8:39, Planet Trivia winner round one. Our first winner is, drumroll please, it's Striker Obi.
Are you serious?
Fucking Obi. Yeah. Who ended up being a staffer for many years, was our winner. And
He co-founded this very podcast.
You know,
he did.
That's just hysterical. And that was when Ty used to run trivia. And I don't know how many people were there, but probably not too many. And that was when we had the old IRC. And
yes.
Yep.
Oh, apparently I'm still on. I had my ICQ. Online. I'm online for ICQ. It says it at the bottom. I haven't used ICQ. I don't even know how long. Oh my god, this is so awful.
So James and Greg, I know you guys are still relatively new staffers, being that you've only been on the split for like a couple years each. But you guys were reading the site back in Planet in 2000 days, right? So, I mean, do you have any memories of...
Yeah, I came across it through the aforementioned IGN.
As did I.
Okay.
Going back to a previous 10th anniversary discussion that John Lindemann's voice was not heard on, the Ocarina of Time one, it wasn't long after that came out that I was really getting into looking at sites and stuff, and I looked a lot at IGN, and I guess it was around that time when, you know, the first rumblings of, you know, a next Nintendo system was kind of coming out in the print magazines and stuff, and that phrase of N2000 was kind of bandied around, which I always thought was curious because I knew there was there's no way it's coming out in 2000, so why? But,
thank you, Nintendo.
But, yeah, and that is how I first came across the site, and I visited it pretty with sort of growing frequency up to the GameCube's kind of unveiling, which, of course, now I remember one of my abiding memories of the site or the whole scene around that time was when everyone thought it was going to be called StarCube.
Oh, yeah.
And I was wondering whether you were all, like, really, really concerned because you couldn't really call it Planet StarCube. It's kind of...
Silly. Yeah.
That would have just screwed everything up.
The other name I heard a lot was N-Cube, which would have been kind of awkward, I think.
A little bit.
StarCube came from Tendobox, because I remember those guys posted that.
Tendobox, holy shit.
Right before.
I haven't even thought of that name in years.
Yeah, I'm so... And Mikey Veroni, the guy that started that site, I'm still good friends with that guy. I still talk to him on AIM all the time. But they broke that. I think it was like a week before Space World when they announced GameCube. And so...
Yeah. Yeah, I
don't know, but yeah, I remember all. Oh God,
I remember being on a conference call in 2000. It was the day after Space World 2000, and I was on a conference call with Nintendo when they were talking. I'm not sure if I was participating or if I just heard a recording of it afterwards. I was pretty small fry back then, so I don't know if I would have actually been on the call. But there was a conference call the day after Space World 2000 when they announced, you know, the name GameCube, and they showed us pictures and they showed the controller and everything. And it was a Nintendo of America conference call where they're talking about the American sort of details. I mean, they didn't have a release date or anything yet, but they were talking, you know, it is coming to America, it will be called GameCube. This is why we designed the controller to look so funky, et cetera, et cetera. And you had all these investors and journalists asking questions of Perrin Kaplan, I guess, and I'm sure George Harrison was on the call. But anyway, I remember Adam Sessler coming on the call, and they had just the Nintendo of America people had just spent 5 minutes calling it GameCube, and they kept talking about GameCube this, GameCube that, and then the very first question is Adam Sessler, and he gets on there and refers to it as StarCube. I thought that was so funny. So Billy, you can tell him.
Yeah, I got it.
I remember that shit, and I still think it's hilarious.
I'll have to bring that up when I go to work tomorrow. That's pretty funny. Yeah. But being at that Space World was probably one of the coolest, like, experiences ever. And like, I remember...
You were at the 2000 Space World?
Oh, yeah.
I don't even remember that. I remember you were at 2001, for sure. But 2000, God, that would have been, like, incredible.
Yeah, and the funny part was, so this is, we were still Planet N 2000, and we had, like, four people, like, on Network Solutions ready to buy a domain the second, like, whatever the fuck it was going to be called. Yeah. We didn't care. It was, like, Planet, whatever the hell, just buy it. Like, buy every version of it, like, all the .nets and .org.
And that's back when you had to buy a domain from Network Solutions.
Right.
That was the official government. I mean, there was no GoDaddy back then.
And so, like...
And it cost... It was, like, $30-something dollars per year.
So, like, Justin was ready to go, and, like, and plus... So, this was happening in Japan, so everybody was staying up all night, and, like... like waiting for this shit to like, so we peppered the site with it, and so I think Ed was the one. Ed actually got it, and so because we all tried getting it, and then it was like oh, because you know once somebody buys it, then it's out of the system. So like, you know, everybody was trying to get it, and so like Ed actually got a confirmation that he got it, and so we were super excited, and then. After we put up, because we put up video on the site, because I didn't know anything about bandwidth. I was like, what the fuck's bandwidth? I didn't know anything about it. Like
HD videos, no.
Because at this time, remember, so this is when we were hosted by NConnect, which is my really close, a really good friend of mine's internet provider. We were hosted by them, and I didn't know anything about bandwidth. So I put up all the pictures. I didn't clean any of them up. All that they're, you know, it wasn't like super high-res photos or anything, because, you know, digital cameras back then were still like I was like I think almost a megapixel, so like
sweet.
That was so still better than the ones in the DSi.
Oh yeah, but still I mean it was still crap.
Considerably
but like,
better,
you know. And I took, you know, I was a picture whore, so I took hundreds of pictures. So we had probably like at least 250-300 pictures, and we put video up, and we were one of only a handful of websites, you know, at least we were probably the only fan site there. And outside of that, it was like IGN, GameSpot. Well, 1UP wasn't in existence yet. So there were very few places that you could get all these images, and we just had a shit ton of them. Well, the second everything hit, like the web, all everybody's websites went down because of bandwidth. And like, I took down, I guess, half of Southeastern Wisconsin's internet provider because so many people hit the website that
that's amazing
that it fucked up everybody's email and like all this shit, and like all of a sudden the site was down and everybody's hitting me on AIM like, dude, the site's down. So I call long distance, which back then it was a big deal, to my friend at the ISP. You know, I'm like, hey dude, I'm calling from Japan, I can't talk long because this is costing me a shit ton, but what the fuck's going on, why is the site down? He's like, dude, what did you put up? And I'm like, you know, like we had. He's like, can you like take down some of that shit, and we'll put the site back up? And I'm like, sure. And so, like, our site went down. Well, Tendo Box was there too, so they were a fan site. So, we were all staying at the new Otani, which is right next door to the convention center, and Nintendo of America and NCL. There, everybody was. That's where you stayed. And I remember going down the elevator, and it was me and Cass Messina and like Mikey from Tendo Box and those guys, and we're like, we're joking, and George Harrison was in our in the elevator as well, and we're going down, and like you know, I get on the elevator and I'm just like laughing, and I'm like, dude, our site's totally fucked right now. And they're like, everybody, we're all said the same thing, because all of our sites went down because we couldn't handle the traffic. And like, well, personally, like, it was my bad because I didn't know any better about bandwidth or like what any of that was, because I didn't worry about it because we had free. And that right after that was when we had to find a new host because my buddy was like,
get kicked off.
Forget it. We can't handle your shit anymore. So, but yeah, that was a very memorable experience. So that's where Planet GameCube, I guess, the name came from.
This has been the video like where you had the sort of sizzle reel with the Donkey Kong Racing that never came out and all that stuff.
That was E3.
Oh yeah, Luigi's
was
Mansion.
That was the.
Did the site have video that I think it was PG? Did I can't remember. There was a great video of that one of those events where someone just had a shaky cam sort of that.
Didn't that turn into the DVD?
That was a later E3, wasn't it? I know somebody like reacting like every single game that came across the system and going, "Oh my god!" Like,
you know, actually, I think that was the the CD like thing, CD/VHS cassette thing that Max did, and it was a total train wreck. And
awesome. Well, okay, so I think you're mixing two things, Billy, because in the year 2001, we had a VHS video of E3.
Right.
Which was, I think, basically the only thing ever attempted like that, because, like, why would you want to buy a VHS of E3?
Well, no, it was a VHS, it was also VHS, and then there was part that I think you could get on
CD. Oh, there was a CD version that Mike Krusecki made, right?
The CD thing that Mike did was for Space World when... Oh, that was the year that I stayed from Space World until the GameCube launch in Akihabara.
So the game, yeah. So it had both, and that was 2001.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
And that documented like that whole adventure, and that was so surreal and weird.
It's basically a documentary of the Japanese GameCube launch,
mm-hmm.
and I mean, you're standing in line for like 12, 18 hours,
17 hours,
having these weird conversations with Japanese people and getting interviewed by TV and magazines, and
that's amazing.
It was incredible. I mean, you were almost like a Japanese celebrity for a while, weren't you, Crazy Billy?
I was known as apparently one of my friends who wrote for Nintendo Dream. He was our Japanese correspondent on the N64 HQ. I got to know him I met him through some people, and we finally hooked up. And
is that Ravi?
No, his name was Yutaka Okaboji, I think. I remember that vaguely. I forget how to pronounce his last name, but I'm probably, at least I got the Yutaka part right. He told me that there, because I didn't tell anybody. The staff of Planet knew that I was staying from. Well, a few people on staff knew that I was staying from Space World to the GameCube launch, but I didn't want to make a big deal about it because I didn't want competitors to know that I was doing this shit. So it was like a week before launch or something like that, and I hadn't posted on the site that much, and I was getting emails, like people didn't know what was going on, and so I finally posted on the website, and I was in Kyoto, and I was like, hey, just let you guys know, we're going to be there at launch. So, my friend Yutaka told me that it was circulating around Japan that there's this guy, Crazy Billy, who's stayed from America, to be there for the Japanese launch of the GameCube. And it was such a weird thing. Like, it was a dream of mine to be, after seeing like the lines of people for the N64 launch in Akihabara, of all these people camped out for a video game system launch, like, I'd never seen anything like it. So I'm like, next, when they do the GameCube one, or whatever, the next system, I want to do it. I never thought I'd actually do it, and it was just like a, it was a weird, I stayed with one of our forum readers that was a foreign exchange student living in Japan from New Zealand. And he's like, hey, dude, and I never met this guy, and he was just a reader in our forums and a fan of the site. He's like, hey, you can stay with me in my apartment. I was like, okay. And so I did it. And
what's his name?
Oh, my God. He's going to kill me if he still reads the website. I'm totally spacing his name right now.
I banned everyone from Oceania. You're fine.
His name was Hong. H-O-N-G. Hong.
Okay. Yep.
And if you go back and look at pictures, I think, of our Space World coverage, like, there's probably pictures of him there. He was in the video and everything like that. And so I stayed with Hong for a while until his landlord found out, and then we got kicked out. And then, but we went to Akihabara the night before the GameCube launch, and I expected to see like people like waiting in line and stuff like that, and there was nobody. So we picked this one store. And we went upstairs to like see if there was a line inside, and there wasn't anything, and neither of us spoke Japanese, so we went and sat out front. There was one guy sitting out front, so one dude beat me, and it was this Japanese guy whose name was Yoshi, believe it or not. And So he was the guy that was in front of us. So I was the first American, I guess, in line after him. So both of us were interviewed like all the time. and it was just, and we stayed up all night. There was like beer vending machines around the corner. And by that, overnight, there were a bunch of Europeans and a bunch of, you know, Japanese people and a bunch of just people from all over the place, or even like, people from, you know, I guess expats living in Japan, all lining up. And it wasn't even that big of a line. It was probably like 25, 30 people at the store that we were at. But we stayed up all night and, you know, had a few drinks and were, you know, just playing like Game Boy Advance games. And this was before the light was in the GBA. So like we were.
Oh, way it was, before, wasn't it? Yeah.
So like that was before the SP. So like, was interviewed Stephen Kent, a longtime friend of mine. He interviewed me for USA Today while I was sitting in line, and at like 4 a.m. or whatever. It was a
Billy. I remember being at school picking up a copy of USA Today with your quote in it, and this was like basically a front page story, and basically running around through the dorm and showing it to everybody and saying, "Look, this is my friend Billy. This is the website I work for." Awesome. And everybody was really impressed. Because you're in fucking USA Today, Ben.
Oh, yeah. Ben was all incredible. Over the place. He was in the BBC as well, the BBC website.
Yeah, I was on the BBC website.
Maybe CNN Japan or something.
It was CNN Asia. I was on TV, I guess. And one of my, Costa, that's how you pronounce it, our previous Australian correspondent, he was watching CNN Asia with his parents, and then I'm on TV. Like, he's like, what the... It was so weird. Like, it was such a surreal trip. And, like, you know, fortunately, when I was younger, I had the opportunity to be able to do things like that. And but it was honestly a dream come true, even though, there was only 3 games at launch. But two of which I brought back. And I remember... one of the funniest things that happened in the store, and it's actually on the video, is that I was trying to buy 5 controllers and the GameCube system because there were people on staff that wanted controllers. And the guy was like, no. And he's doing like the X sign with his arms, like, no. And, and he was pointing to the box, like, there's 1 controller in the box. I'm like, yeah, dude, I get it. You know, like, I want 5 controllers.
Oh, that's right.
And like,
yeah,
because everybody, there were a couple people on staff that wanted me to ship them, you know, so I picked up.
Just love the idea. It's like, no, I don't want your money. No, you know.
It was very Japanese, you know, so he was being really polite about it, you know, and there's TV cameras everywhere, like, filming everybody being the first people to buy the GameCube, and I'm me, so I'm being obnoxious, and we're having fun, and we hadn't slept all night, it was just weird.
Yeah, so, I mean, I had really vivid memories of this, and I was really psyched for the Japanese GameCube launch, because we had the Japanese Super Famicom, we had the Japanese Nintendo 64, I probably wasn't going to get one that close to launch, but I would get one pretty soon after. But it all ended up being kind of subdued because it took place right after September the 11th.
Yes. It was immediately after 9/11, which
was... So, Billy, you were in Japan during 9/11, right?
Yeah, and it was that... Sad to say, like, a blessing for the website, because the people that were going to be trying to travel over to be there for the GameCube launch couldn't get out of the States. And actually, the last American... Probably the only American journalist that could get over there was Stephen Kent, and he was in the air when the shit was going down during 9/11. So
wow.
I was just staying in some. I wasn't staying with Hong at this time because I got kicked out. I was staying at this like little Roken, which is like a community style, like it's kind of like a youth hostel, but you have your own room and you can lock the door. And downstairs they have like a communal TV, and somebody was flipping. I was watching some weird movie on the American channel or the English channel, and somebody's like, "Hey, can I change the channel?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he flipped it, and it was just this picture of the world or footage of the World Trade Center right after the first plane went in. And this is like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night in Japan, and I thought it was a movie. We didn't know what it was, and it was all being everything on news was being spoken in Japanese, so I didn't know what was going on, and someone came in and told us what was going on, and we ended up staying all night. So
I think it was just like a day and a half afterwards. I mean, that must have been...
It was surreal. It was very...
Extremely difficult.
Surreal, and especially, you know, I kind of stand out like a sore thumb in Japan, so a lot of people were asking me, like, what I thought about it, and I don't know. It was very weird, but it was... The Japanese GameCube launch was actually... at least Nintendo and a lot of people thought that that kind of hurt the GameCube launch a little bit in Japan because of 9/11, even though it was a totally different country.
It's hard to segue out of that, but I did want to say that I remember when you were in Japan for that month or so when you were gone for Space World and the launch, you basically put me in charge of the website, and it was somewhat secretive. Like, you didn't want the readers to know that you were gone. Like you said, you know, you didn't really want the competition to know. I don't even think some of the staff knew that you were still gone.
Nope.
That's one of the advantages of having an online staff is that, you know, sometimes you can pull things off without everybody knowing. But you didn't want to create a panic or whatever. And so you basically kind of left me in charge to make sure things got happening. And I'd been on the staff for about a year at that point. And, you know, I had kind of been promoted a couple times already, and I had a lot of responsibility, but I thought, you putting me in charge, I thought, wow, this is like, I wonder if he is trying to set me up for something. And then it happened, I don't know, one or two other times the next year in 2002, you know, when you were gone for a week or whatever. And so I think when you finally asked me, like, very beginning of 2003, to kind of take over as director, I wasn't that surprised because I had been kind of prepared for it. But the only reason I say any of this is because I wanted to make a special mention of somebody who I think is a bit of an unsung hero on the staff, and that's Rick Powers. When you offered the job to me in 2003 and you told me that you were going to Game Informer, I knew about it before anybody, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't even tell the staff until like really close to basically the site's birthday was about the time I took over. It was around March, I think, or April. And I remember being kind of concerned about accepting the job because I knew I was going to Russia for that summer to study abroad.
Oh my God.
For like 2 months.
I totally remember
and
that.
And I was kind of concerned that, you know, I take over the site, we go to E3, and almost as soon as I get back, I go off to another country for 2 months where I'm not really going to have much internet access. And I felt like, you know, this whole thing could fall apart. You know, there's no telling. I won't even know day to day what's going on. I won't even be able to read the website, much less run it. And so I was really concerned, and Rick Powers really stepped up and helped me a lot that summer. And he basically was the de facto director while I was gone. And then there was no, you know, he had no problem handing it back to me when I got back. He was really gracious about it, and he kept things running really smoothly. And I think the reason I wanted to bring this up is because I don't think he ever got much credit for it, and I don't think most people, including some of the staff members, really knew how much he was doing at the time. It was really actually a very deliberately held secret from the readers at the time that I was out of the country because I didn't want them to get concerned and start going to other websites because they thought, you know, this guy just took over the site. He doesn't really care about it. He's gone to another country. We don't hear from him for days at a time or whatever. And so Rick really kept things going. And so I just wanted to give him a shout out. And hopefully we're going to have him on the show eventually. I've talked to him a little bit about it, and I'd like to do that, but he's a great guy.
See, I think there's a lot of people that deserve shout-outs. One, it's not a person, it's a lot of people. You know, when I was in Japan between Space World and the GameCube launch, we had just gotten a monster fucking server bill. Like, it was... I just about flipped. I was like, because this was right after E3, and we did a phenomenal E3. I think that was the year that we got the picture of the logo first, and so like all yeah. We got all this traffic, and it was just this huge influx of traffic, and we had switched server places and all that, and I got this ginormous server bill that I could not afford, and I was just like, holy shit, we are so screwed. And I remember putting up a PayPal thing and just saying like, hey, we could really use your help. And so many people stepped up. like immediately. And you know, whether it was $2, $5, some people, like, I got like some crazy donations of like $50, $100, whatever, and like, you know, that added up, and that really like got us around the bend. And like, you know, so for anybody that's still listening or donated, thank you very much, because that's why, you know, we're still here talking about the site today, you know, 10 years later. And the other two people, I think, well, there's a lot of people, anybody on staff definitely deserves a shout out, but Max Lake actually was director before you were, Johnny, when I was when things got really busy with me at the radio station, when I still had the radio station job in Minneapolis. I was promoted to program director, and Max ran the site probably for about 6 months, and or maybe a little longer, I don't remember. But you know, he kept the site together until, well, the radio station flipped formats, and then I came back and continued on. But you know, Max did a great job, and loved him to death for it, and still.
He was our editor in chief, but it was basically the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. And then Justin Nation, for sure. The back end of the original Planet GameCube, Planet N2000, after we dumped all of the shitty front page stuff, was all coded by Justin, and he lost a job actually because he was putting too much time, I think, while at work, on coding our website. So, you know, there were a lot of shit happened. Their girlfriends lost, jobs lost, you know, probably friends lost. I don't know.
In my case, more like girlfriends never gotten in the first place.
But like, there are a lot of people that really deserve a lot of love, and you know, the one thing I think I'm pretty much going to say in my introduction to the anniversary feature is the fact that my favorite, you know, everybody's talking about their favorite memories and stuff. My favorite memory is that I'm still friends with everybody. Like, I still keep in contact with a lot of people that worked on the website, and you know, knowing these people for 10 years plus has really been an awesome experience. And you know, even the new guys, you know, that, you know, during E3 when we do karaoke night, and getting to meet everybody for the first time, and after reading their shit for so long, like, it's really special, and it's really awesome. And the people that put the site together every day for free and work their ass off, like, really deserve a lot of props, because, you know, for 10 years, there's a lot of people have, you know, poured a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in this. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, this is the site that you created, but it's the site that everybody did, you know, and really worked their asses off. And I was just some crazy fucking kid that wanted to do this website, and everybody else had the same amount of passion, if not more, than I did, and really stepped up and made it happen. So all those people deserve a lot of props. So thank you to everybody.
Yeah, I totally second that. And as far as my favorite memory of the site, there's so many that I can't even dredge them all up right now. And as the more we talk about it, the more memories that come up in my head that I have to kind of turn away, because we could go on forever. But the one kind of recurring event that I enjoy so immensely every single time it happens, and I look forward to it, and I really hope that I can be a part of it again this year, is the crazy update festival after the Nintendo press conference at E3.
Oh, God.
And Billy, I know you have some memories of this, and I hope that a lot of the listeners and maybe James and Greg kind of have an appreciation for this also, because the press conference, this was back before you had like live streaming. So the way that you found out what happened during the Nintendo press conference at E3 was to read the coverage that went up in the hour or two after that. And we had, I think, some of the best coverage of that nature for years.
Well, yeah, because at the time, there wasn't, I don't believe there was an internet feed in the room either, so people couldn't update their pages as
that's
stuff
right.
was breaking.
There's oh, no dude, such this thing is, as live blogging.
Dude, there wasn't even wireless back then. Like,
yeah,
you know, I didn't actually, no.
You didn't have phones that had internet. I mean,
no.
You didn't have anything like that.
GameSpot actually had feeds going, but that was the only place I think that had, I remember, initial feeds, because, like, Justin, you know, Justin Nation would be on the home team with whoever else was on the home team, and so they'd basically do the play-by-play of what was going on GameSpot, and then you guys would go back to that one rinky-dink internet cafe that was by our hotel and just like...
Yeah.
Oh, that's glorious.
We would take it over. We would rent out the entire internet cafe. And then we'd have somebody go on a McDonald's run and everybody else would write. And we would write for like 3 hours. I mean, it's bizarre because, you know, we for years and years, and we still do this, we'd have staff meetings over IRC or AIM chat or something like that. So what always struck me was that it was almost exactly the same. It was like one of these nights where there's some weird Nintendo random press conference in Japan, and you have 10 people on the staff. They stay up until 3 in the morning, and they're watching videos. They're looking at screenshots of this. They're writing up all kinds of articles about it and trying to get it up on the site as soon as possible. They're all excited. They're calling, you know, I'll do that one. I'll do that one. Hey, Johnny, will you look at this? Make sure it looks okay. Did I get this fact right? Can we check on this? And seeing that transform from an internet chat into people actually being there in the same physical space, and it works the same way. And that's what I always liked about working with staff members on this site, because and I guess with social networking, this isn't so much of an issue now, but back in the late 90s, early 2000s, the internet was a kind of a place where you went to become someone else for a lot of people. And I was never into that. I was never interested in role-playing online kind of stuff, you know, going into chat rooms and, like, playing weird characters, which is a big thing at the old Nintendo website. I don't know if you guys ever did Camp Hyrule, but it was all, yeah, like, weird. It was all weird online role-playing and stuff.
It was bizarre.
And they would have, like, beach volleyball in the chat room.
Yeah.
Just strange shit. So what I always loved about meeting Planet GameCube people in real life was that they were exactly what I expected them to be. Because the people that we worked with, the people we hired, they weren't interested in role-playing. They were interested in getting shit done. And when you met them in real life, maybe they didn't look like you expected them to or something like that, but they always talked and behaved the same because they were real people. Even online, they're real people. And especially in those crazy update festivals that we would have after the press conference, that's when people's weird personality quirks or whatever would go away, and you would realize, these are the people I've been working with for the past couple years and could never see their faces or whatever. These are the same people, and they're really talented, and they're really dedicated, they're really hardworking, and they're just pumping out like 6, 7, 8 articles every hour for hour upon hour. And then, you know, and we all get done, we go back, we play some games, we have a meeting that night to talk about what's going on, and we realize E3 hasn't even started. We're all exhausted and thrilled and pumped up. And that was so much fun. And I hope from the reader or the listener's perspective that you guys really enjoyed that too, because I know, you know, having been interested in this stuff before I started writing about it or before I joined the staff, that was always a really exciting time for me when I could just refresh the page over and over and get the brand new info, the latest thing that was added, and, you know, try to get this some little tidbit or some little observation in this article that I haven't read in this other article that was posted before. That's really exciting. It was even more exciting for us, I think, to be on the writing end of it. So it's not a single memory, but it's a series of memories that were all very similar, I think.
I'd like to piggyback on that, and like the one thing that I thought was that we did that was really fun was that during E3, since we, especially the E3s that we'd roll in like 20 deep, like which we did 2 years,
yeah.
We'd have all the shit done on the second day, and I'd always make sure that, because the third day all we wanted to do was play games with each other. And so, like, the third day was great, you know, like, because you just walk around, like, all the GameCube or GBA areas and, like, be able to, you know, I'm going to play you in Wave Race, or let's, you know, whatever else, you know, we could get our hands on, we'd be playing against other people and talking shit and playing Smash Brothers and, like, you know, it was so much fun, you know, and, like, you know, we're all, you know, basically one giant family and, you know, getting to play these brand new games with people on our staff was just hysterical and so much fun.
I think we always, especially at E3, felt a really strong sense of responsibility to everybody else, because I always felt like, you know, I'm one of the first non-corporate people to play this game in the world. You know, I mean, the way we lined up for E3 the day before, I might be the first person not employed by Nintendo to ever play this game. And, I mean, there were probably a couple cases where that was true. And that is an amazing feeling, but at the same time I thought, now, if I was at home reading the website, what would I want to know about this? What would I want Johnny to write? And so that's always the way I kind of looked at it. And I felt like, you know, if we're in this really lucky, very special, fortunate position of being able to be here, play these crazy games, and write about it, we want to make sure we do the best job possible. And I think we totally kicked ass over and over and over again. And, I mean, that event changed so much over the years, and the staff changed, the number of people that we could bring changed, but I've always felt that our E3 coverage was great, and especially when you consider the limitations placed on us and, you know, the difficulty of working with PR people when you're, you know, considered a fan site or whatever and trying to arrange all that stuff. I've always been so proud of what we were able to accomplish at those events. But, I mean, I think talking to people like me and Billy and John Lindemann, too, if he was here, if you start asking us about our favorite memories, a lot of them would come down to things that happened at E3, because that's where you really get the personal element of working with the other people. So that's why we kind of keep going back to it, because that's the stuff that really sticks out in your mind more than anything.
Yeah. We're going, what, 11 deep this year?
I hope so.
We're going to have, like, 3 people who have ever been to E3 before.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's going to be nuts. Because, I mean, I'm one of only, I think, 3 people with editor in their title going. And only one of the three of us has ever actually been to a press event. And it's not me. It's going to be weird.
Yeah.
It's going to be kind of like it'll probably be not that dissimilar from the first few ones we did, because it's going to be so few experienced people there.
Well, and that's it's also really cool. Plus, again, they're bringing back the old style of E3, which personally
I
like it. I mean, I remember, you know, rolling in with everybody on staff like the first day of E3, like waiting outside the glass doors, camped out a couple hours ahead of time. So we were the first people there, and you know, we've only had like 2 or 3 hours of sleep from the night before because we couldn't sleep because we were so fucking excited and like, you know, they'd open the doors and we would sprint to the Nintendo booth.
Oh yeah,
and
yep, like, dead sprint.
Yep.
You know, and like people are like, who are these freaks? You know, because well, we were freaks, and you know, like,
pretty much.
Oh, and we just like, and plus 20 of us running in there, like laughing, like cheering, and just being super excited. And then, you know, bam, you know, starting to play the games. It's just a spectacle, but it's, you know, the old E3, and I'm really looking forward to seeing this one. Like, it's going to be over the top, and it's really a lot of fun. And every, you know, your first E3 is, I think, will always be your, you know, probably your most memorable. So, you know, enjoy it. It's going to be fun.
You know, I'm glad they're charging admission to the general public now to raise money, which is something that I think I had originally written that they should do like 2 years ago. And I think it's really a brilliant strategy, because one of the things that the people who were showing at E3 hated was how much money it cost, but it's a really important money-raising thing for the ESA. So it never really made sense why they didn't just charge admission, because people would pay it. I mean, when I was in high school, I would have paid $100 to go. I would have done it.
$100? On average, I spent $600 or $700 to go.
Well, no, I mean just
with
for a
free
ticket.
Admission.
For a ticket.
Yeah.
I obviously would have had to spend more, but I mean, just for the ticket, yeah. I would have paid that. Because I didn't have all the awesome connections of, yeah, I work in the games department of my Walmart out in Biloxi. I mean, yeah. I know the threshold
Dude,
was low.
My first E3, I registered as the webmaster of a GeoCities webpage.
That's brilliant.
Well, now, Johnny,
it was totally legitimate, too. That was the informant, you know?
Both of our websites, but the first business card that I got from Johnny was actually like on a handwritten piece of paper.
I wrote it. You asked me if I had a business card, and I'm like, yeah, and I tore off a piece of paper and wrote my shit down on it.
And I wanted to hire you, and you were being scoped out by like Nintendorks and like some other people, and I was like, whatever, dude, whatever it takes, I want you to work on our site. And that was at a Sapphire party. Do you remember that?
Yep. Yep, I could have gone and worked with Max Lake at Nintendo Joe, actually. Yeah, I had, and do you remember in gamers or in genres?
In genres.
You remember in genres?
Yep.
Yeah, they wanted to hire me. It was weird, man. That was
it was all part of the master plan. I swiped you all.
Well, that was the year, and I'll talk about this a little next week, but that was the year I met Dennis Dyack. I played Eternal Darkness for N64.
Yep.
And there was all kinds of crazy shit going on that year, man. That was the year that Dreamcast won E3.
Oh,
the only thing the Dreamcast ever won.
Yeah, and everybody thought, wow, Dreamcast is the one to beat because they won E3.
They did. Dude, their booth was the shit, and their lineup was awesome. And like,
they did.
I remember that E3, like, the outside of Eternal Darkness, which was a great game, the most popular booth, like, part of the Nintendo booth was... Mario Tennis.
I think it was Perfect Dark. Mario Tennis was a smaller little kiosk, but Perfect Dark was coming out like 2 weeks after that E3.
Yeah,
right. Which
and
is why
it was the most well known. So like all the EB workers and people like that, they were hanging out there because they wanted to play it because they actually knew what it was.
I just remember playing.
That's what I remember.
Every day we'd all meet at the Mario Tennis thing at like 3 o'clock, and it was like me, mm-hmm. Fran, who's now still at IGN, and yep. All the Tendo Box guys. We'd be playing Mario Tennis 4-player, swearing our brains out, like screaming and cheering and everything, and like the booth babes were totally freaked out, and like they're like, "What the fuck are these kids doing?" And like,
well, you were all drunk from the Conker Bar.
Hell
right?
Yeah.
That was the year Nintendo served beer at E3.
A mistake they never
replicated. They built their own indoor bar with Conker's Bad Fur Day, and you could go in and pick up. I wasn't even old enough. I was 18.
It was brilliant.
So I couldn't even have a beer.
So I guess if we go rolling on in there, we probably shouldn't expect liquor from Nintendo anymore.
Probably not.
You know, you might if you get a VIP thing.
That's
but,
awesome.
Let's say it's not the only time I ever drank beer with Nintendo people, but... Yeah. To get away from E3, I know Billy will share this sentiment, but going to Nintendo headquarters in Seattle, in Redmond, was a bizarre experience for me. Almost out-of-body experience to walk in Nintendo headquarters. I actually went twice, and those memories are they're almost a blur to me because they were so trippy that I couldn't even accept my senses, you know? But I played Metroid Prime 2 Echoes for about 3 hours one day inside Nintendo headquarters.
Oh wow!
And
that was that your first time that you went to NOA or?
No, I think I know one time they had that, and then the other time I went, it might have been in the spring because they were showing us Mario Power Tennis for GameCube and a few other things.
Actually, this is a very funny story. My first time that I ever went to Seattle. And then actually went to Nintendo was Microsoft. This is when I was the director of the site. Microsoft flew me out to Microsoft
self-defeating
go to this Xbox Live boot camp. And I'm like, why me? You know, I'm the GameCube guy. And they're like, well, you know, we want to see what the other side looks like, blah, blah, blah. And we want to get your opinion. And I was like, okay, awesome. So in the back of my head, I was like, okay, I'm going to Seattle. I'm going to Nintendo.
Yeah.
And on Microsoft's dime. Pretty fucking funny.
That's
like,
amazing.
And so I got it worked out that an old Team Nintendo guy that I knew, Tom Leonard, who's no longer at Nintendo, I let him know.
Oh,
that,
really?
Yeah, no, he's not.
Too bad.
I let him know that I was coming if he could give me a tour of Nintendo of America. And so I don't know if Rick was with me because Rick lives in Seattle. I'm pretty sure Rick was with me, but we got a tour of NOA, and I just remember being so retarded excited that I was actually at Nintendo. But the funniest part, obviously, is still the fact that Microsoft footed the bill for it. So
I have a similar story that's maybe a little different, but the first time I ever got to go to New York City was paid for by THQ. They were having WrestleMania up there.
Oh, God.
This was like in March.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it was the year they had WrestleMania at Madison Square Gardens, and they asked us if anybody wanted to go. I was the director at the time, and I said, fuck yeah, I'll go. I want to go to New York. I don't really care about WrestleMania.
This led to the joypad throwing melee thing.
Yes,
didn't it,
yes, that's World when store. That is the context of that story at the Nintendo World Store.
Yeah. Well, what's now? Was it the Pokemon Center then, or not?
You're right. Yeah,
that would have been the Pokemon,
Pokemon Center
at
that time.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah, but it's what's now called the Nintendo World Store.
That's right. Yeah, I won't retell that. But the reason that Rick Powers and I were both in New York and we were both at the Pokemon Center when I told that story is that basically Rick really wanted to go to WrestleMania and I really wanted to go to New York. So what we did was I took the flight from THQ up there and I went to the press event. I played the game. I wrote about it. And I asked the THQ people, do you have a problem if you book a double hotel room for me, you know, with two beds? And they're like, no, it probably didn't cost them anything extra. So we did that. Rick paid for his own flight out to New York. And we both went to the press event because I knew some things about pro wrestling. I was a fan in high school, but I didn't keep up with it anymore. He was a huge fan. I think he still is. And, so we both went to the press event. We both did an interview with the developers. We wrote about the game, did impressions, whatever. And then I gave him my WrestleMania ticket and he got to go to WrestleMania for free and it was sold out and everything. So it was a dream come true for him. And I walked around Greenwich Village that night instead of going to WrestleMania.
Could you have found a place more different than the WrestleMania crowd to go?
I really didn't care at all about WrestleMania. I wanted to go to New York, and that was an amazing trip for me. And we ate at Yoshinoya in New York City.
Hell yeah.
Yoshinoya was a place that was near our old hotel at E3, and we always went there every single year. And I'm not even a huge fan of Yoshinoya, but it's such a part of the experience that I love going there just because it's so crazy.
Well, we went to Yoshinoya because that was a place that I ate at all the time in Japan because it was so freaking cheap, and I end up just really loving it. And then I found out from Bloodworth, who's now at Game Trailers, he's like, yeah, we've got Yoshinoya in LA. And I'm like, no way. And then we found out like that there was one near our hotel, and that's why we... It was random, and
it's down at MacArthur Park.
Yeah. Also, another random trivia thing dealing with Yoshinoya that one of our staffers, our Japanese correspondent's name was Bakuden Yoshinoya,
nice.
That wasn't even his real name because all of our Japanese correspondents while I was director we changed their name because I never wanted someone to like steal them to be their like paid Japanese correspondent, and
We also had Tonkatsu. Something.
Yeah, because we renamed them after Japanese foods that I really love.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah. It was so awful.
That's terrible.
Oh, man.
And you know what? Yep. There are people who had the opportunity to get jobs based on this who couldn't because no one believed their resume.
Well, some people who did get jobs based on working here, or at least people who've moved on to other things. I guess we could... You know, you just mentioned Dan Bloodworth. He went to G4 briefly and then now works at Game Trailers. Mike Sklens, of course, he works for the Florida State University, as you might guess from his constant Go Noles crap on the early episodes of the podcast. Carl is now doing a couple different podcasts and I think he's kind of looking for work or finishing school. I'm not sure exactly.
Finishing school? He's,
I think so, yeah.
These girls are really young. That's the joke.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the joke is that he's finishing high school.
Oh, yeah. No, he's not that young. Stan Ferguson, I think, went to go do a theater at, like, Off-Broadway or something, and now I'm not exactly sure what he's doing.
Last I heard, he had like narrated some children's book on tape or something.
Yeah, and he has a great radio voice, you know, so that doesn't surprise me. Of course, Bonnie Ruberg, we had her on the show a few months ago, but she writes for fucking Village Voice, Playboy, all kinds of places, the Onion AV Club sometimes. She's probably one of the most successful staff alumni that we have. And then Mike Thompson, he works at IGN Insider now. He was on the staff for a little while. And I'm probably forgetting a lot of people who kind of went on to do other things.
You're forgetting Ed. Ed Shee worked for 3DO as a tester, which the poor bastard had to test Rubik's for months and months and months, and used to bitch all the time to me, like he wanted to like stab forks in his eyes. But yeah, he did that, and then he actually moved on to LucasArts. And
then he had to test Star Wars Galaxies. No, Star Wars Galaxies, like one of the worst MMOs ever. And
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, it was really bad. But you know, in Ed's defense, he knew it was really bad. But he also eventually kind of moved up into a little bit of production role, and over the years, they really kind of did a lot to try to fix Star Wars Galaxies, and he was involved in a lot of that. So he did a lot of good work over there, although I don't know if it was ever appreciated very much. I'm looking at our show notes and trying to think if there's anything we haven't really touched on that we should before we finish up.
There are some like question stuff in there that could be kind of...
Okay. Why don't you go for it, James?
Oh, well, I was thinking like the coolest thing you've done / piece of swag strictly involved from NWR, which we've kind of done the thing you've done, but the swag stuff. I know some good stuff's come through that I had to give away as community manager.
Yeah. I had that Pikmin 2 diorama that was signed by Miyamoto and Tezuka and tons of guys. And we bid that away for Child's Play. So I'm not that much of a swag collector, but I do have a really impressive collection of business cards.
Nice.
And, you know, it's like, it's people like, people go up and they, you know, they ask Miyamoto for a business card. It's not like you're ever going to call him.
That's
you
what
know,
you
if you send it,
I'm going
to
call
if
him.
If you send him a, and I've actually tried to email some of these guys, and if they get an email in English, it's automatically forwarded to Nintendo of America PR. So they're totally collectibles. And I have a Wada's business card, crazy shit. So
actually,
that's one thing that I never thought I would do is collect business cards, but after a couple years at E3 doing PR, you build up a pretty nice set.
I just had the thought of if they forward all the English email directly, why didn't you ever get Ty to translate your emails for you?
Actually, a funny story when you say you have Miyamoto's business card. So remember, so when I was there for that month, I went to Kyoto. I mean, you can see all this shit on I think in the logs of the website, but when I went to Kyoto, the only reason I went to Kyoto is because that's where NCL is. So I wanted to go to the building, and I had Miyamoto's business card on me. And so when I went and actually found NCL, I went to the security post because it's like a gated thing, and you know they basically you don't get in the building.
Like the Pentagon. You're not taking a tour. You know.
Yeah. So like I walked up to the security post and there's two guys sitting in there and I'm just this crazy American guy and like I had Miyamoto's business card in my hand. I'm like I just like pointed like Miyamoto. I'm like I want to meet this guy. Like I want to see this guy. And like they both look at the business card and they just look at each other and start laughing. And I sat there for like 5 minutes, and then they called somebody, and this woman came out with like this like brochure for the GameCube, and like gave it to me and bowed and said thank you very much, and I said something I think it's on the site, but it was basically in really bad Japanese, please take me to your GameCubes or something like that. Like I said something just horrible. Like, and I was just goofing around, having fun. Like I didn't give a shit. You know, I was just like whatever. But yeah, that's my weird Miyamoto business card story. So,
oh, that's funny.
I was just some American making an ass out of himself outside of NCL. But my favorite piece of swag would be the first Space World I ever went to. I brought a copy of Ocarina of Time, the gold cartridge, and I got that autographed by Miyamoto. That was pretty neat.
Yeah, that's cool. Nintendo comes up with a lot of really bizarre packaging, like pack-in items that they send along with games, and it's the kind of thing that I think they're designed more for like mainstream media who don't know much about the games ahead of time, and sometimes they're just simple like t-shirts, but a lot of times they're really strange things. Like one time with it might have been Battalion Wars or some kind of military theme game came with a K ration, and I actually ate it. And it was delicious. It was really salty. It was like teriyaki chicken, and it pretty much contains an entire day's worth of calories. It was like 2,000 calories. But one time they sent me cookies with Metroid Prime 2 icing.
What?
Oh yeah,
decals
I had
on
that.
Top of the cookies.
It doesn't even make sense within the confines of the game.
I know. It's totally bizarre.
They tasted like shit.
I thought they were delicious, but maybe they were fresher when they got to my door.
Just
I liked
Metroid
them.
Bias showing through.
I know.
Greg would have thought they were communion if he ate them.
And actually, I should say, in terms of swag, after Billy went to Space World one year, he came back with a copy of Sin and Punishment for me. So
nice.
I have to give you a very big thank you for that, because that was pretty awesome. And that was, even at that time, it was quite difficult to find in Japan, and I'm sure Billy paid a lot of money to get it. So it was a really special gift. So I appreciate that.
It's because I love you, man.
I know.
Remember when we did like the big contest giveaways, and the biggest one that we did, like we gave away a Q, one of those Panasonic Qs, and we gave
I remember that contest.
We gave away piles of shit.
Yeah, and speaking of prizes, I dug this up the other day and sent it around to the staff, but Aaron Kaluska, our IT director, before he was on staff, won this ridiculous contest that we did back in like 2004. It was 2004 for the Nintendo DS launch in America. And Nintendo came to us with this idea to give away this huge contest prize that was basically a free trip to LA to get the first ever Nintendo DS sold in America.
Or sold really?
Sold in LA at least. And they came to us and said, "We have this prize. We want you to give it away. Do you, you know, can you run a contest to give this away and, you know, and help us promote the Nintendo DS launch?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." So we gave it away as a Planet Trivia prize.
Really?
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was one of the last Planet Trivias that we did, because the popularity of Planet Trivia was kind of waning at the time, and eventually it got to where it took so much effort to write all the questions and only 5 people would show up to play, and that's why we don't do it anymore. But at the time, it was still kind of one of the signature features of our website, and so we're like, "Dude, let's do it." And we had hundreds of people show up play. And it was very fiercely competitive. I mean, it was a very challenging game of trivia on any week. But we made the questions extra difficult this time. And, you know, and Aaron is a massive geek. I mean, he, you know, he's one of the ranking, he's still on the staff of the Mushroom Kingdom. So any kind of Mario shit, he's a total expert on. And he has this weird savant knowledge of Nintendo trivia, and he won that. And so he and his friend, who is, Dan, I cannot say his last name, but Dan W, who's also on our staff now, both of them went down to they got to fly down to LA, and they got like a couple $100 in spending money, and Nintendo picked them up in a limo and took them to this really nice hotel, and they got free Nintendo DS and everything, and they won that through our website. And then like a year later, we hired Aaron for the staff.
That's awesome.
It's pretty funny. So every now and then we give away some giant fucking prizes, and hopefully we'll be able to do that again sometime.
I think the best thing I gave away was the hourglass we got for Phantom Hourglass. And I remember, I don't remember who reviewed that game or who got our review copy.
Was it Zach, would it have been? I think got the first one.
I think they were bent that they didn't get it, which I guess I can understand, because that is kind of awesome. So didn't we get something for Layton, too?
Yeah, the hat.
Yes.
Which you can still see in Chris Kohler's videos over at Game Life.
Everyone wanted the hat.
They're really
yes.
funny. Oh, man. Man, we've really gone on for a lot longer than I expected about this topic, and I think we're probably just going to have to cut the show short a little. Well, not short, but cut our plans short a little bit, maybe, and kind of wrap this thing up. So I guess we should mention that we're going to have a daily retrospective. We're going to do 1 year per day, and we're going to have these big, really heavily researched articles about, you know, the year 1999, what happened in the world of Nintendo that year, what happened for our website, what was E3 like, what were the games that came out, what were the big announcements. So these are I guess they're a little bit like Wikipedia entries almost, but they're going to be full of a lot of... We're not taking them from Wikipedia, trust me. There's a lot of work being put into this. And, I did one for 2002, and it took me several hours of research and writing.
That was a really big
together.
Year as well. I mean, that was
one of the most... It was. And even, you know, I think I have a pretty good perspective on 2002 because I was heavily involved with the website that year. I was at E3 and we did the DVD, and it was a really big year. And I knew that when I chose it, I thought, you know, this will be fun because 2002 was like an awesome year for Nintendo. And then going through it and writing that article, I actually realized it was even a lot more awesome than I remembered. And it brought up a lot of crazy memories of things that got announced and never came out. I couldn't believe the number of first-party games for GameCube that came out that year. It's totally ridiculous. I mean, everybody knows, like, Mario, Zelda, and Metroid came out that year. And that was like, oh my god, they all came out the same year, at least in Japan. But we also had, like, Eternal Darkness, Star Fox Adventure, Animal Crossing... crazy shit to all have come out in the same year. It was mind-blowing. So and the Wavebird came out that year. It was an awesome year. So I had so much fun going through and reading all that and putting it all together in the article, and I think our listeners and our readers will have the same experience when they go through and read these. And I can't wait to read all the other years that the other people on staff wrote. So I hope people will look out for that. We're going to be bleeding them out one day at a time, and it should be a pretty awesome special when it's all said and done put together at the end.
So the plan for that, just to be clear, is I think it's 6 o'clock Eastern, so 3 Pacific every day. Yeah. So I think we'll probably be beyond, you know, maybe 2000 at this point, 2001. It's gonna be a pretty massive feature by the time it's finished.
It's gonna be epic.
Yeah.
Epic and a lot of fun to read, I hope.
I would suggest you bring a snack because it's going to take a while.
I look forward to reading them. I honestly can't wait to read it. It's scary that it's scary and awesome and really like unbelievable that the site is still going. And I congratulate everybody on staff that has kept the site going for as long as it has been. And you know, I look forward to reading the website for years to come. So you guys are doing a hell of a job, and it's fun checking out the continuing adventures of Nintendo World Report every day.
Amen. Well, we're going to have to wrap up the show now for reals. So I definitely want to thank Billy for coming in as our special guest and getting all nostalgic with me, especially. And I hope you guys enjoyed hearing all these crazy stories from behind the scenes over the years. Next week, John Lindemann will be back, God willing. we'll be talking about Eternal Darkness, so please keep playing that. And you know, I'm a little disappointed at the level of discussion in the forum thread right now. So if you have memories of this, if you're playing along with us right now, please get in there and drop your thoughts, discuss it with the other people, discuss it with us. And I'm looking forward to some really cool interaction and feedback on that. And if you have any thoughts about this episode, what's going on right now, if you have any special memories from the past 10 years of reading our website, we'd really love to hear some of that. Maybe we'll do a big mailbag special coming up soon. You can send those to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Greg and James, for putting up with me and Billy totally ruling over this episode between the two of us. You guys are great sports, and it's great to have your perspective too, having been readers for a while before you joined the staff. So that's going to do it for us. See you next week. Bye.
Later.
See you.
Bye-bye.
I didn't even get to say interbutts.
Interbutts, yeah. Sorry.
Work on that.